This week on Super Skull, we're joined by Mandime Christian Silberice. I apologize again. And Nick, Christian, and I dive deep to what might be wrong with the comic industry, but also what might be right.
Alrighty.
What are you doing?
Alrighty. Welcome to Super Skull, your weekly new comic day audio digest from Vault to Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff since 1996, recorded in partnership with the Ann Arbor District Library. Bless their hearts. I'm your host, Nick Wybar, joined by my friends and co-workers, Marcus Schwimmer.
Hey.
Wait, what? What was that?
Hey. Sorry, I stole. Stole is not the right word. I acquired through force this slinky from the Ann Arbor District Library, and it's been consuming my attention a little bit.
So, you're in a library,
yes,
where there are children running around,
yes,
and you took a slinky that you found.
That's
somebody's slinky. Somebody's upset right now.
Borrowed it
with force.
That other voice that you hear, Christian Silberice.
It's me.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very well. It's a pleasure to be here.
We haven't had you on the podcast in a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really glad that you're here.
Yeah, I'm not podcasting in here with you.
You're podcasting in here with me.
That's a really good point. We are forewarned. Yeah, we're down one Curtis Sullivan today.
Yeah, he's doing work up in Grand Rapids, in the Grand Rapids shop.
He is. He's needed.
He's needed.
He goes where duty calls him.
Duty calls.
I've been thinking about another nickname for Curtis.
What's that?
Well, his name is Curtis Sullivan.
Yeah.
So I've been like trying to figure out a way to Cecil, but it sounds a lot like just the name Cecil.
Cecil. Mm, yeah.
I kind of like it.
So I'm still kicking it around. I'm still kind of drafting it. Cecil.
Cecil.
I like it.
Will you guys think about it a little bit?
Yeah, for sure.
I appreciate it. Well, if this is your first time tuning in to Super Skull, we talk about comics.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we do. Every single week.
And other stuff.
Yeah. And sometimes other things.
Yeah.
Time and again. We at least pick one book every week. You look like you want to say something.
I have some general public announcements.
Oh, I'm getting there.
Oh, okay.
I promise.
My bad. Sorry. You sound like you were ready to dive right into comic books.
No, I'm going to but you know, that is what we do. Is it not?
Yeah.
We pick comics. We talk about comics. It's a new comic day show. New comic day is Wednesday every single week. If you were going to read a few things, we're going to help to guide you a little bit, maybe.
Roger.
That's the goal. But before we get into that, I think Marcus might have an announcement or two.
I have some public service announcements. Yeah, we got some events going on at the Ann Arbor Vault of Midnight, and I wanted to let the listeners know what's going on.
Hit us.
So, August 15th, International Doctor Who Comic Book Day.
What?
Get ready. All you Whovians, I know there's a small army of you out there. You're going to want to be at Vault of Midnight at 4 o'clock. Both locations.
What's going on?
We're going to do a little cosplay get together. We got all these little activities and snacks, and it's just going to be like a really cool way for the local Whovian community to get together. Also, Titan Comics, the group that's putting out the Doctor Who comics, starts their big summer crossover. They sent us a bunch of really cool promotional material for that event.
A little some freebies.
Yeah, it's going to be a sweet little Doctor Who.
Some give-em-aways.
Yeah, it could be some give-em-aways.
Yeah.
I've been asking people in the store who I know are Doctor Who fans, like, oh, what kind of snack should I provide for you? And they keep saying fish sticks and custard.
What?
Yeah, that's like their go-to. Oh, they go, fish sticks and custard. Totally normal. And then they'll walk away. And like multiple of them have done it.
Huh.
Doctor Who fans, I don't know if you've been to the basement of Vault of Midnight Ann Arbor. You don't want fish. I don't want fish sticks or custard.
That's a non-starter.
Yeah.
No fish sticks in the basement.
Yeah, no fish sticks.
Lower level, excuse me.
Sorry.
If Curtis was here, he would call it the lower level.
Yeah, so that, but like, I don't know a ton about Doctor Who, but I know that I don't want to see people eat fish sticks and custard. So I'm going to try to get some cookies, some refreshments. I'm going to try to make it better than fish sticks and custard.
This is what people who watch Doctor Who want to eat.
They want to eat fish sticks dipped in custard. I don't get it.
Is that a real thing, or is that like a Doctor Who reference?
People having some fun with you.
No. We have a guy. His name's Ken. I've known him for a long time. We went to undergrad together.
Yeah.
He's a legit Doctor Who fan. He said, if I don't get fish sticks and custard,
then they're going to know that we're posers.
Exactly. But I don't know if there's a giant prank the Whovians are playing on me, or if these people actually want to eat fish sticks and custard.
Maybe it's like some fish stick shaped saltines that we should get.
Oh, that's a much nicer idea.
Something very clean and scentless.
Yeah. just sounds ideally. Like a terrible combination.
Well, that's Doctor Who Day. What else we got?
Sorry. And then the 16th, the day after, we have Stephen Serro coming in. He's an artist. He put out this really wonderful book, Sunbeam on the Astronaut. And he's going to be in, and he's going to be doing a video showing, and he's going to be signing posters and books. Every communication I've had with him makes him seem like a really cool dude. So we're really excited about it.
Sunbeam on the Astronaut is a particularly good title.
Yeah.
That's a name.
It's got a little bit of a psychedelic vibe to it, I guess how I would describe it.
Yeah.
We're going to have this book in the shop on Friday, hopefully, so you can come check it out before the event starts. But this guy seems really cool. I hope we can pull a crowd for him. He's got a lot going on.
Cool.
That's what I got.
Thank you for the community announcements.
You're very welcome.
The community thanks you.
Thank you on behalf of the community.
You're welcome.
Should we talk about comics now?
Let's.
Jeez.
All right. Jostle.
Let's move in to the big picks. We just heard Marcus talk for a while, so maybe we'll just switch it up.
Cool.
Christian?
Yeah.
Did you have a big pick this week?
I had some big picks.
What was your favorite?
Well, my big pick for the week was Dark Corridor.
Yeah.
By Rich Tomasio from Image Comics. Rich Tomasio's done a ton of small press original graphic novels, stuff that just came out as a book, never as single issues. Typically for Dark Horse, he's got a big old body of work. Dude knows what he's doing. But in this one, he's going, most of his books are long form, but he's very practiced, so he's really good at the short form now as well. And he's fitting a lot of info in these two short stories that are all set within the world of Red Circle? Red City?
Do we know?
Red Circle.
Red Circle.
Is the name of this town, which I imagine to be Californian in a way, given the landscape.
So it's the name of the book is Dark Corridor.
Correct.
Red Circle is the first story.
Yes.
And then what was the next one?
Seven Deadly Daughters.
So there's
the second one.
Three titles,
essentially.
For this book.
It's like a mini anthology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
I loved it.
He's got a real super clean line art style. It's a borderline cartoony, like a classic cartoonist style.
Mm-hmm.
But it's him doing real short form, like noir crime stories, which are one of my favorites out there. A lot of moral gray area, a lot of hard choices.
Man,
usually a main character or two not making it to the end of the story. Yeah, it was a real solid book. It is an Image number one, so we love it. Surprise.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, these two short stories in it, real good. One of them features a dog who maybe has been involved in some type of crime and is leading a gentleman to maybe solve it. Maybe he's got nefarious intentions.
The dog?
Sorry, the gentleman that
oh,
he will
got
be
it.
The gentleman he's leading on. Maybe he's got some other stuff going on, some moral gray area that I love from all the crime noir comics.
I don't want to call you out or anything, but were you okay reading a book about a dog?
I was all right.
I asked that because, don't dogs make you cry?
Yeah, a real cute, okay, well, now, you know, it's better if I talk about it.
Let's just get it out.
Yeah, real cute dogs will make me get a little teared up.
Yeah.
You got to be bigger. Can't be like a lap dog. And the more lupine they are, the more wolfish, the more I'm ready to bust a couple tears out.
What do you think that is?
I don't know.
Do you think that is? That's just a product of...
Well, I had a dog for a while, and I don't have a dog. I don't miss the hair, so that's cool, but
yeah,
I just like to pet them.
Yeah. I thought this would be funnier.
Is this like a plea?
I didn't want to turn this into a bummer.
Right, no, now, I feel like Nick and I should go buy you a dog.
I can't have a dog. I can't have nice things. But it's like that they're smiling. Like I don't know what's going on with dogs. They seem really happy, a.k.a. maybe dumb. And they always seem like they're smiling. It's very inviting.
Yeah.
Pretty into it.
I'm not. Yeah, dogs are awesome.
They're easy. They're kind of easy to please.
We're all agreed.
Yeah. I like them. They're furry. They're warm and stuff.
Yeah. Did you pick this book because of the dog?
I don't think so, but it was a big thing. When we read them together, I don't know if you hear me go, ooh.
That was just because of the dog?
It was a canine. This dog just a canine. Some dogs, like an Alaskan Husky, K-10, K-11. I wouldn't go K-12 because that's weird. And K-11's a really, really terrible Jim Belushi dog cat movie.
Oh, Christian. He's going down a Christian
so
wormhole.
It's no Turner and Hooch.
Yeah.
It's not very good.
Stop making connections to other movies. Stop it.
I really like this book. I like this book. There's a scene where a bunch of criminals are divvying up the loot that they've acquired.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderfully written little moment.
So when I read kind of crime books like this,
yeah.
I go back to... I think about Ed Brubaker and Sean mm-hmm. Phillips, obviously.
Yes.
They're kind of like my touchstone for crime books.
For sure.
And this was lighter mm-hmm. than that kind of thing, but still, but only in, you know, in tone, not in content.
Sure.
Still very violent, still super dark, pretty intense. So it made it kind of interesting because it's kind of this like interplay between the art's kind of light and there's some jokes, you know, but still very intense situations, right?
I dug it.
And very tight, very tight.
Very tight.
Very concise storytelling. Apparently these are pitches that he thought of back in 2006, 2007, and just wanted to refine them and try to condense them. And it's a real concise, nice tight read, all self-contained. So you're not going to get another monkey on your back. You won't be involved in a whole nother story here. You can just get some real kick-ass storytelling.
I hope there's like threads, though.
Yeah.
Between the next ones.
I think
it's
that they all take place in this one town.
I like that. Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
That's one of the things I still like about Sin City, which is not aging the best for me
right.
as I age. I just see more of the things I don't like in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of the things I still like about Sin City, and it's one of the cooler things about Ed Brubaker's Criminal, that they're all in the same city at the same time. So they're interconnected in the way that they have a setting and they're all in the same world and they're all kind of doing the same stuff, but it's not a crossover. There's no event book. It's just like
right.
there's some touchstones. You can kind of reference stuff and it feels
that
nice
character
to be,
pops
to be in
into
the world.
Whatever. Yeah. And you yeah. might see him for a second and then he pops back out.
They might all go to the same bar and like that dude will be in the background and yeah. maybe he'll buy the other character a drink, but he's not a factor in the actual narrative at all. It's pretty yeah. cool to see.
Why do you think Sin City hasn't held up? Or why do you think it doesn't hold up?
So many.
Parts of it I really like.
Mm-hmm.
I love extreme violence.
Yes.
I love the heavy inking. I love the way Sin City smells because there's so much ink in it. It's like almost like...
It does have its own smell.
Yeah, it's almost like gasoline where you're like, oh, that's really terrible and unique at the same time. And then when it goes yeah. away, you're like, oh, I kind of miss that gas
I love
smell.
Hate that.
Yeah. So the smell, because there's so much ink in those books, it just smells like a marker, which I like.
Do you think was Frank Miller just trying to like imprint sense memories on you?
I think so. Yeah, I'm like, hey, I like this because I was 13. That was cool. I used to have a dog then. the things that have not held up is a larger part of the Frank Miller problem, which I'll try to condense here. We have to go fully into.
I want
to
hear you. Yeah, go ahead.
I think that he is a little misogynistic, and I think he is sometimes afraid of women and afraid of brown people.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a bummer to me.
Yeah.
It's
not subtle, it turns out.
Yeah, it's not subtle. And he has, I don't know much about this, and I don't want to, you know, because the majority of people here, one, know how to work the internet and maybe a podcast and are way smarter than me. But he has a little bit of the Madonna horror complex where it's either like all the women are on a pedestal or they're like evil machinations. They're out to like get him as a man. This is me speaking as the protagonist for all of his series.
Right.
It's either the femme fatale who's like wronged the main character, or someone has to save a woman.
Yeah.
Like a damsel in distress. And those are not my favorite polarities, and they're very uneven.
And they're kind of like, and they're tropes that you see in the crime genre.
Sure.
And I don't know what, you know, that he's, I'm not giving him the benefit of the doubt that he's like playing off it.
Right.
But what's cool about Dark Corridor is that we don't get any of that.
Correct.
It definitely feels modern in the way that more of the, you know, the crime books that we like now have kind of updated.
Yeah, where they're about like people and emotions and everybody kind of makes poor choices and or is like just maybe that's their life. Like, oh, I'm a hitman. I kill people for money.
Yep.
That's what I do. I move on, but I still got to go. I'm out of milk and toilet paper.
I was going to say, you still got to go grocery shopping.
Yeah, exactly. So this does the crime genre well.
Dark Corridor does.
It's not overly like gritty. It's got this nice clean art style kind of balances out the...
Agreed.
The lack of morals in said world.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Really liked it.
Yeah. I'm glad we got to talk about Frank Miller a little bit.
Yeah.
That was the condensed version. Yeah. Buy me a drink sometime. I will.
Christian Silverice, everybody.
Give you my full hot opinionated details on Franklin Miller.
You don't have that kind of time.
I will eventually.
I promise you.
I will eventually cry more than I do when I see dogs when I start talking about Frank Miller.
Marcus.
Can I go last?
You want to go last?
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem. You don't want to. You want to follow up Bowery Boys?
I do. I really like this book.
Well, I picked Bowery Boys. This is my pick this week. Bowery Boys, Our Fathers, Which might mean that this is going to be a continuing series.
I hope
don't know.
So.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. It's tough to say Bowery Boys.
Yeah. Bowery Boys.
I struggle with it every time.
Let's go B Deuce. I'm going to say B Deuce.
B Deuce?
Yeah.
The double B.
The boys.
This is a story about unions. This is a story about New York in the, what year is this set in?
1854.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That seems early.
No,
for all this like, union stuff.
No.
I think we're in the zone there.
I think you're in the zone. It's definitely, I thought it was more like turn of the century, but.
Well, it's definitely Industrial Revolution.
It's
yeah,
post,
it does seem
it's
early.
Post-Civil War.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So we got to be closer to turn of the century, I think. It's kind of like set in the, you want to take a peek
yeah,
here?
Yeah, no, the history major in me needs to know.
Yeah. And it's about a union of carpenters who are contemplating a strike. And the impact that that has on everybody. It seems like it's gearing up to kind of focus on the kids in sure. these situations. So what do you got there?
1853.
Christian called it.
Close enough.
I should not have doubted him.
It's September 1853, so it's closer to 1854 yeah. than it is not.
yeah.
Close yep. enough for jazz.
Fair enough.
It
close
does
enough
seem
for
early.
Bowery's.
When I think of union strikes, I think of like, you know, I guess the railroad and like Pinkertons.
Well, you can tell in this book they're not really prepared to handle it.
No, they
society does not have mechanisms to account for what's going on. Like when this strike is breaking out, there are a lot of people and kind of ethnic groups and gangs that are all trying to figure out how do we shut this down with violence as soon as possible. So it's about the Catholic ward boss or like the union leader's son. It's about a young Jewish man who is kind of coming of age, just about to be bar mitzvahed, and he's getting introduced to like this other side of, you know, this particular, you know, his temple and his rabbi is sending people in to go deal with this situation and to like go bust up the union strike, and this kid's like kind of wrestling with whether or not this is something he wants to be a part of. It was really, really cool. It's a graphic novel. It's a book. Right?
Hardcover.
Yep, we're looking at $20 for a really sweet hardcover. It's really well done.
Yeah, union drama is always really interesting to me. Like labor drama. I don't know.
Totally.
Yeah, so it's a part of American history that's pretty unique. And man, it shapes our country.
It reminded me of Gangs of New York in some ways.
Yeah.
Especially in the beginning of the book. As kind of like the big players are setting themselves up. I only read the first like 30 pages of this because it's a lot of comics to read, just enough to kind of like see if I was hooked or not. And I'm 100% hooked. It's balancing a ton of characters. I don't even know how many, like, there's probably around 8 to 10 in the first like 30 pages that I read, like the main kind of, you know, players of the book. And they're balanced really, really well.
So one thing I noticed about this is with the art style, like, the way this team writes and draws cityscapes, you can tell like it's like a lot of people, but they're in such a big industrial zone that like their problem is very small. Their problem is large, but physically they are small.
Yeah.
Compared to this really large landscape of machinery
right,
and industrial
like the,
evolution. And
the city is like overwhelming.
The city is
yeah,
a character
right.
in itself with the way it's drawn. It's like this giant.
It's very imposing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Really dug it. They're not afraid to pull back the scene to give you some perspective.
Yeah.
With the surrounding architecture. The art in this book is stunning. It's grade A.
It's
really,
very,
really good.
Very stylized and very cool. Kind of cartoony in some ways. Man, yeah, I really, really liked it. Very violent.
Pretty violent.
Pretty violent.
Yeah, or at least one scene in the part that I, you know, in the beginning of the book that was like hyper-violent.
Yeah.
Like, and like very, very well-drawn.
Absolutely.
Very well-drawn violence.
Yeah, very well-drawn violence.
That's the thing I'm into. Only fake violence. I only like fake violence.
Okay, so what are all the things that we know about Christian?
Dogs.
Dogs, yes.
Fake violence.
Violence, yes. Shotguns, but we don't have time to get into that.
No. Nope.
Certainly don't.
Yeah, and...
soup. I'm really into soup.
Also into soup. And Frank Miller...
Not so much.
Not so much.
I'm just really into comics in general.
Yeah.
And hanging out in small rooms with people I trust.
Yeah. With microphones sometimes?
And having potential strangers listen to my innermost thoughts and hear about the things that make me cry.
Excellent. That was my fault. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I blame the dogs.
I blame every dog. Anyway, that's Bowery Boys. It's a graphic novel. So I just want to point out the blurb that Mark Miller wrote on the front of this
Jesus
book.
Jesus Christ.
Says, if I'd realized Corey Levine was this good when he was my editor, I would have had him rewrite all of my scripts. This comic is terrific. Mark Miller, writer.
Fuck off, dude. Like
they put writer after his name.
Yeah.
Anybody have a problem with that?
Man, I like some Mark Millar books. Like I've said it on the air. I stand by it. But I like some of his books. This dude is such a.
I'm just pointing out. I don't want to go off on a tangent about Mark Miller here, but he did find a way when writing a blurb, a complimentary blurb about somebody else's book. He found a way to talk about himself. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, totally.
I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
So Bowery Boys, I think, is going to go under a lot of people's radar. It's like a big hardcover book that comes out and see a bunch of other stuff.
And it's shrink-wrapped. You can't see the insides.
Please ask me about this book. Ask anybody about this book. I think it's going to be, we're going to get some buzz about it. People are going to be writing about it, I think.
Yeah.
Give it a read. It's really, really cool. More comics like this. More graphic novels like this, if you please.
Bowery Boys. Good stuff.
Nice segue. Nice wrap up.
I was trying to transition.
Fantastic.
Because I'm a little nervous about what's about to happen next.
Marcus, what are you nervous about? Do you have a pick?
I do.
Okay. I don't know why you're nervous. Why are you nervous?
Well, because I'm publicly admitting that I made a boo-boo.
Oh, it's just an opportunity for improvement, man. We're all just trying to do better.
So I made a boo-boo.
Are you like not used to publicly apologizing for your mistakes at this point? I feel like we have hours and hours of tape that are just laying down your mea culpa.
Well, so this is the thing. As the last episode, the 50th, I said that I gave some bad advice. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to come out and say that I made a boo-boo on a former episode, and I don't want people to get to the point where it's just like, oh, we don't trust anything Marcus says. I'm very hesitant to do this in the first place.
50 episodes in, my brother.
Yeah.
You see that sail off in the distance?
Yeah.
It's a ship.
Yeah.
It's going away.
That's why I'm very nervous to talk about this. So,
what was your pick?
I was very hesitant to like We Stand on Guard number one.
Why were you?
All right. So I will say that the point I made with issue number one is that people were jumping on the bandwagon because it's Brian K. Vaughan. He writes Saga and a horde of other good books.
Mm-hmm.
And the first issue didn't reach out and grab me. And I will stand by and say that there are some aspects about the first issue that I stand with my comments.
Okay.
I read number two. And I really like this book.
Oh, interesting.
I really like this book.
Yeah.
We Stand on Guard. Number two comes out this week. Man, it's a well-crafted comic book. And I am sorry that I dogged it so hard on issue number one.
So you were wrong.
I was harsh in my criticism.
Okay.
Of We Stand on Guard number one. And I'd like to try to make it up to this comic by picking it as my pick this week with We Stand on Guard.
What about
two.
This issue brought it into focus? What made you want to change your tune with this one?
They really honed in the personal stories of one or two characters, and it works. They really dive into the backstory of some characters.
Because that was your complaint about the first issue, was that there was not a lot of characterization.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of characterization. We got we kind of got this G.I. Joe band of group of people, and we're just supposed to accept that they're on this mission against the United States. And it was just kind of, and I stand by that. The first issue, I didn't have the characterization I wanted. But number two, they really dive in with one character and her backstory, and it makes this comic book really rich, and it just... A super good piece of science fiction is being published right now. We Stand on Guard. Yep. It's really good. They make it believable. And what I liked about this issue is they show the personal turmoil that happens during war and the toll it takes on people.
Yeah.
And they do it in a really good way. And I thought in that first issue, I didn't see any of that. I thought it was just a little bit of a political piece, and I was totally wrong. We Stand on Guard number two dives into the effects of war on a number of people, and it does it in a really class act kind of way. So I'm sorry for dogging on issue number one. Every single person who is over the age of 16 should probably be reading this book. I think it's an excellent book, and I think it shows both the horrors of what a large war would be, but it also does it in a fun and enjoyable sci-fi way.
The horrors of war, now fun.
Yeah, fun, but you know, there's a really good thing talking about what would happen if this giant world war happens between the United States and China, and they do a really good job with it. It's mm-hmm. very enjoyable. It was a zinger of an issue.
Cool.
We Stand on Guard number two. I apologize for being so harsh on number one. Everyone should be reading this book. It's very, very enjoyable.
Really, really well-drawn shotguns in this book, too. Very, very accurate shotgun
yeah.
drawing.
That's huge.
I appreciated that.
Can we talk about some more about how you're wrong?
Sure.
So,
what else would you like to talk about?
So, we've talked in the past many times about the effect of the number one issue. And I've heard you write off a lot of number one issues because they didn't grab you right away. We have tape of this.
There's
tape?
Probably been a couple of them, yeah.
About how we're owed, as an audience, a really good number one issue.
Yeah.
And so, is this the case that disproves the whole theory? Do we have actual evidence now that sometimes you need to give a little room to breathe? And
yeah, so, sure. Yes.
I just wish, listener, that you could see Marcus. And he's just, the wheels are turning so hard in his
brain.
Well, no,
because I do, so a lot of this, Nick, stems from the fact that I dog on Warren Ellis a lot.
What does this have to do with Warren Ellis?
Because a lot of this argument stems from Supreme Blue Rose. This is where I started dogging, is because Supreme Blue Rose and Trees came out.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh, it's Warren Ellis. You have to let it sit and it becomes a fine wine. That's the way Warren Ellis writes books. But neither of those books developed in any...
Well, we've had this conversation about many books many times. And I only bring it up because I think there's a lot of people that read comics that feel the exact same way. That, like, there's too many comics coming out in the world.
Yeah, there's
a
lot.
If I'm not, like, you know... That first issue has to do everything for me or I'm out. And I've heard you say that many,
for sure.
many times.
Yeah.
So
sure.
What I'm trying to see in your eyes, what I'm trying to see in your eyeballs and your soul is if this is the point where you think now that that's not enough, that you have to kind of maybe go on a little bit of a journey and give a book a chance. I'm not saying that a first issue has, you know,
no,
we want them always to be, you know, as good as possible.
Right. It's rough in today's market. There are a lot of comic books. I get the pleasure of reading comic books essentially for free.
Sorry, guys. Sorry, listeners. But it's true.
It's true. Yeah. I work at a comic shop. I get free comics for free. So I can feel meh about an issue number one.
Not totally for free. I mean, you did read Bloodstrike, and that cost you.
It cost
me.
That cost you last week. But I can read... yes, it did. I can read an issue number one, feel meh about it, and I can pick up that issue number two because it doesn't cost me anything financially.
Yeah.
But, man, in today's... I was wrong on this, and yes, this shows that a book sometimes will take a couple issues to mature.
Yeah. Oh,
but,
this is awesome.
Yep, but I will stick by my statement that in today's market, with how many good books are coming out... In the world today, with how many good books are coming out, you do have to pay a lot of attention to your first issue, because especially with like Image right now pumping out as many number ones as they are that are really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Secret Wars coming out. You got 6 or 7 titles every week sitting in that number one, number two zone. That's a lot of money.
It's tough.
It's tough. And if this whole idea that, you know, you get 5 or 6 issues, if I didn't get to read comics for free, it would be much harder. But
so,
I do.
Yeah.
So yes, there are books that sometimes, We Stand on Guard is a good example, will take time to mature. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But in today's market, it would be foolish to think that you don't have to grab quick.
You mean that the writer doesn't have to try and grab you?
It is a side effect of the comic market we live in now.
And not everybody knows that, like, you know, it's Brian K. Vaughan. Trust him. Like, that's
right?
I don't think that's a fair thing to ask of a reader. You know?
No.
Totally.
I don't think that's that's a reasonable request,
right?
In the world today,
Trees. My prime example.
Don't make this about Warren Ellis.
It's not, but I'm just saying. Like, I stuck with that book 5 issues.
Yeah,
and
That's $15.
It's hard to do in today's market because there's a lot of bangers every week.
Yeah,
with that number one. So yes, some books need time to mature. Also, the market is going to force writers, as it becomes more popular and more number ones come out, to really have to pay attention to that first issue because there is not the leeway there used to be.
All right, I accept your apology.
Is that what you took that as? Okay, cool.
Can I ask what are like 2 good number ones that you're like, oh shit, I'm gonna be reading. Now I'll be reading this for the next couple of years.
Yeah, sure. Wild's End number one. The moment I finished that comic, that first issue, that I was in. There was no. Mm-hmm. Steering away from that point.
Yeah.
I would say the other one that really grabbed me would have been, I'll go Edge of Spider-Verse number one. They just like opened the. There was no light entry into that crossover. Mm-hmm. It was just, we're gonna fling the doors wide open. Here's some really weird spider characters, and this is what you can expect in the future. Both of those had me hooked in very different ways right off in issue number one, and I followed both of them through, and a ton of other people did as well. Both of those series are really good examples of a solid number one. Wild's End was, what is going on in this world that I'm so familiar with, but is yet so different. And Spider-Verse was, I'm a spider guy, but holy, I'm seeing all these spider people that I've never even seen before.
So the only reason that I keep that I'm staying on this for so long is that I think that it is a problem because there's a finite amount of money in the world, right?
Today.
But in the world today, excuse me. Thank you, Christian.
You're welcome.
But if you could miss out on some really sweet stuff.
Absolutely.
If you bail.
Yep.
Especially after a first issue. But how do you know? You know?
Trust your comic shop, I guess.
Trust your comic shop and, you know, do your research, I guess. That seems like a bullshit excuse.
Yeah, it really,
thing to
no
say,
one wants to do the research on the comic. They will come in what's good and get what's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's on us. It's on our shoulders, gentlemen.
Well, it's a big responsibility, but I accept.
We Stand on Guard number two. You can still get number one, I believe, Dynamite Buck.
Absolutely. And before we move off the big picks, I should point out that Corey Levine wrote Bowery Boys. I don't know if I said this.
No.
Corey Levine wrote Bowery Boys. He's a he used to be an editor for Marvel. And it was drawn by this dude, Ian Bertram. And I'm not seeing a lot of the work listed on this page here, but we'll try to link to some stuff in the show notes.
Cool.
That was about Bowery Boys, and I didn't bring it up, and I would be remiss if I didn't point out who made the book that I really liked this week.
Hey, guys, we picked all three of us picked real gory books. Not gory, real violent books this week.
They were all pretty violent.
Yep. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
My bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. I guess.
Comes out, you know?
Sorry. I'm not sorry. Shall we move on to the poll box?
Let's
whiz through it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, we talked about a lot of stuff. Let's do it quick.
Can we move into, because while we're kind of on the topic, there is... Arclight number 2 came out this week.
Yeah.
I think this is a really good example of kind of like what we're talking about. So this is Brandon Graham, right? So I love Brandon Graham, but his stuff, I read the first issue. I was intrigued. I didn't really know what the hell was going on.
Yep. Sometimes that's a Brandon Graham comic.
Yeah.
Here's the world. It's gorgeous. We don't know what's going on. Here's some names. Here's some references. You're welcome.
Yeah. Get it or don't. Brandon Graham don't care.
Right.
And for a book like Prophet, it works really, really well. Like, each issue is kind of a one-off, or if it relates to something that's happened before, it's just kind of like, you know, just little string, little tangents, maybe.
Yeah.
But this is, like, very serialized, and I had the same problem with, like, multiple Warheads.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember, I can't read this book that I haven't read for a month. It does not lend itself to the monthly thing, I think. I'm sure that when it's all said and done, and when it, like, comes out as a collection, it's going to be gorgeous.
Yeah.
Because historically, like, I can see what's going on. It's really rich. The creatures are really cool. The characters are really interesting. But I've lost that narrative thread.
Yeah, and he wants you to buy into a tone, which I love. It's very much like atmospheric.
Very much.
But you might lose that if you're only reading it for a couple minutes once every 4 weeks.
Absolutely.
But on the whole, when it's all smashed together, it's like his work will get you.
Yeah. This is just and I only bring it up because this is that thing we're talking about. It's the monthly, the idea of reading comics every month versus the thing of like trade waiting, they call it, or just like buying collections only, you know, which is a thing that we talk about with people that shop at the comic shop all the time, right?
The trade waiting is becoming more and more popular.
It is, and it bums me out because I love reading monthly comics.
But I get it,
and especially it just makes more sense for some comics.
For sure.
It makes more sense to read things, and it just does. Some writers are really good at writing in a serialized form and, like, writing an arc in one issue that leaves you hanging and then picks you back up when you don't feel lost and you're ready to go in on the next issue. Not every writer is good at that.
Right.
But Brandon Graham may not be very good at that, but he's one of my favorite writers in comics, and it would be a shame if that dude couldn't make comics or didn't put out monthly comics. So I get it, and I'm just, you know, wrestling with it. In my mind, banana.
Speaking of bananas,
brain plantain.
Also, what comes
my
out
brain,
this week?
My brain plantain
is the Humans number 7. It's a book about a primate motorcycle gang.
Yes,
I did not like this book at first. I love it. I'm in deep, deep love with this book. Another book about war commentary. done in a really interesting way. Great book, The Humans Number 7, out this week.
If Curtis was here, he would say, are you in deep, deep like with it?
No, I'm in love with it.
Okay.
Yep.
I decided to do that
I've
for
I've also separated books
Cecil.
That I think you'd all like to talk about in piles for you.
What do you got? Well, Christian, what else is in the pull box this week?
Oh, right. In the pull box this week, I had This Damned Band. It is a band that is touring in 1974, so I already love it because I'm crazy about the 70s.
Yeah.
So now you know everything about me. Please
use this information.
Please leave my bank account undeterred. You can basically get into it.
Yeah, be cool
point.
If you see Christian.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you know all my flashing red points, all my weak points.
Maybe we can get Raybot in the show notes to just post a list of Christian's fears.
And likes, yeah. So like if I got a dog and put it in a shaggy 70s vest and named it Campbell's.
Oh, yeah.
Christian would be, he'd be done.
Yeah.
That'd be it.
Yeah. Name him Remington and then on his neck, instead of having like a little barrel of brandy, a little barrel of soup.
Oh my god!
Well, thermos soup.
Wait, it's actually a really cute character.
These right? aren't these are not tears, but this is there's some dust in this studio.
It's a really dusty studio.
I'm not tearing up right now.
Yeah.
Awesome. This Damned Band, Dark Horse Comics number one, out this week.
This week it's awesome to me. It's a 70s band that is basically a portmanteau. It's a combination of two things.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're a portmanteau of Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones. Essentially, they are a band that is part of their image. Casually talk about how into Satan they are and how they worship the dark arts, but it's all a ruse. But then maybe...
What if...
Maybe it's not.
What if Satan, then?
What if Dark Forces has found them? Dun, dun, dun.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I liked it.
Pretty rad. Cool art style. If you like Led Zeppelin, if you like comics, if you like getting weird, if you like Satan, check it out.
Which I do. Why not? So on behalf of producer Rachel Polk, I'm going to pick her pick this week. Which I'm assuming is true. Siege number two, Battle World, Siege number two. Is that accurate, Raybot?
Pretty much.
It was really cool. The art was fantastic.
There's a giant laser beam that goes through some big monsters. Really cool to look at.
The art is spectacular.
Yeah, real good.
Yeah. If it's Battle World, it's more Battle World. And if you wanted to skip this book because you read the original Siege that came out from Marvel,
yeah,
and your natural inclination was maybe to skip Siege,
don't
skip Battle World Siege.
Cool. Also, Kaptara by Chip Zdarsky, coming out this week, number four. This book is my kind of weird. Giant cat tanks and a mix of Flash Gordon and maybe a really intense LSD run.
Cat tanks?
Cat tanks. Giant tanks that are made of cats.
Cool.
Really cool book. Chip Zdarsky also just got announced he's doing Jughead for Archie. Going to do a Jughead comic that I'm very much looking forward to. Don't miss out on Kaptara. It's a cool book.
Yeah.
Nothing like it out right now.
Cat tanks, cool. Maybe they should have some dog tanks.
Multiple cats?
Well, one giant cat with tank tracks attached to its side.
Okay.
Cat tanks.
Cat tanks.
Yep. Cat tanks. Cat tanks, man.
Cat tanks for the pick, Marcus. What else you got?
Boom.
Christian?
Right now, I got John Flood. It is written by Justin Jordan of Dead Body Road and Luther Strode fame. It's a pretty wild book. It is all about a private detective who has been augmented by the government to never sleep, and he does some weird stuff. He's plugged into some odd things. He's trying to track down a untrackable, downable serial killer using his crazy brain powers.
Cool.
Because he's totally nuts. It's wild from the mind of Justin Jordan. It's pretty badass. It's issue one. I'm excited to see where issue two goes.
Excellent. We'll just run through the last few here. Jupiter Circle number five out this week. Civil War, another Battle World book. Civil War number two. The Spire number two. I'm really excited about The Spire number two. Mad Max Fury Road. This is part two of two for the Mad Max arc of the Fury Road stuff. And then finally, Darth Vader, number eight. There was even more stuff this week.
Lots of good picks.
But Wicked and Divine, there's a brand new Wicked and Divine this week.
That book, man, no one saw that book coming. And it is a tidal wave of awesome.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it. Love it.
Do you guys remember this book, Morning Glories?
Yeah. Yes. So
Morning Glories also came out today.
Yeah.
And there was a time when that was just the hottest shit in the world.
Really?
Yeah.
Steaming.
And the pull list has just cratered on it. It's Nick Spencer, I believe.
And he had a big gap where there was no book, too.
Because they're at like 47 issues at this point.
It's wild.
Yeah. I just remember when that book was like, it was what Wicked and Divine is right now.
Really?
Was Morning Glories when it came out.
It was a little mini saga.
Wicked and Divine is almost at, I think, 80 or 90?
66.
66, yeah.
Subscribers, yeah.
That's a no-joke poll.
That's a no-joke poll. That's a real good poll for Vault of Midnight Ann Arbor.
Man, it's a It's a good book.
It's a good book. Anyway, yeah. That gave me pause today.
Real quick, last thing. Power Man and Iron Fist, the Woo! Epic Collection. It's a giant collection of awesome Power Man and Iron Fist comics from the late 70s, early 80s. Tons of origin stories of these two buddies.
Yeah.
Running around 70s New York, kicking butt. It's the 70s. You know I love it. You know I love Iron Fist.
Former Super Skull podcaster Ian Roulette, I know, is going to be very excited for this Power Man and Iron Fist collection.
I hope his former and future podcaster.
Oh,
Ian
we
Roulette.
Need to get that dude back on. Yeah. I miss him with all my heart.
It's going to happen. But yeah, he would love this book.
Listening to that dude talk about the immortal Iron Fist, it fills me with such joy.
If it doesn't make you want to read Iron Fist, then
nothing will.
You don't have there's no heart.
Yeah.
Pumping in your whatever. That's the pull box.
That's a pull box. It's hot. It's hot, hot heat.
It's a hot, hot heat. Let's move on to some other stuff. I just wanted to take a quick moment and talk about the conclusion of Matt Fraction's Hawkeye.
Thank God that book's over. Woo!
Yeah, what a stinker,
What
huh?
a stinker.
Man, oh
Except
man.
Except for maybe it's the best Hawkeye ever written, ever.
It's one of the best comics written in a really long time.
I'll back you up there.
It's real good.
Will you back me up there?
Yeah, I got your back there, boo.
Thank you. It was really, really good. So that book was very, very delayed.
Yes.
Sporadic.
It took a long time.
22 issues in 3 years.
Is that right? Yeah, that sounds about right. And it was sitting back and reading through it, I was struck by a couple of things. The first one being that David Aja, or Aja, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce his name, is like one of the best dudes working in comics. That guy is amazing at his job.
Yeah, I was talking about how I wish that book was bigger.
Yeah.
The format was larger, not because it's immaculately detailed and I want to zoom in on stuff. It's just it's very clear and clean and has a very primary color palette.
The coloring.
I would love to just get a little more immersed in it.
I completely agree. They put out a hardcover of the first like 11 or 12 issues with a little bit of back matter and a little bit of like process on how it gets colored and how they pick the palette and stuff. And that book is just so good. It's such a perfect gateway to superhero comics coming out right now.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to see what superhero comics can be and what they're capable of in 2013, to now, like, check out Hawkeye. It's a really good argument that, like, this shit is not what you think it is.
And the pitch of the book is essentially, you know, Hawkeye's an Avenger. He's really good at shooting arrows. Sometimes he has really cool arrows, but he's hanging out with we've all seen the Avengers movies. He's hanging out with like a dude in an invincible iron suit and like a giant monster that's a super scientist and a god.
And a Norse god.
Somehow able to be on the playing field.
And Hawkeye is just a dude.
He's just a dude. In this series, he's just a dude. He gets involved with some people that live in a tenant building that's being overtaken by the Russian mob, and Hawkeye is just trying to look out for his new homies.
And it's also about Kate Bishop as much as it is about Hawkeye. So the name of the book is Hawkeye. His understudy, Clint Barton's, who is Hawkeye, his understudy or, you know, protege, I guess you'd say.
I would say protege.
His ward, I think
ward.
He calls her.
Ward.
Oh, it's nice.
Is Kate Bishop, who also goes by Hawkeye. She had the mantle at one point. And we take, you know, for 6 or 7 issues of that book, it was all about her.
Right.
And it was just a whole arc about, like, her out in L.A. And it's still a Hawkeye book.
And they both call each other Hawkeye.
They both call each other Hawkeye all the time. But that dude, it's just Matt Fraction, like, at his best. It's super funny. He's, like, using themes that run throughout the whole thing. That dude, when he's on, there's, like, nobody's writing comics better than that guy.
Yeah, there was an issue of this comic where Hawkeye gets his hearing aids all messed up. And they do the whole issue with like symbols.
Yeah.
And it's some of the best storytelling.
Well, so that was the dog one. There's two. There is one where he loses his hearing.
Yeah.
But then there's that one with symbols
is the one
from the perspective of Pizza Dog.
That's right.
And the whole comic is told from the perspective of Pizza Dog. And they keep calling back to that issue to like fill in the blanks of what people were saying at certain points in that.
Oh, God.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like this weird spaghetti wrapped story, like all 22 issues. They keep referring back to stuff that happened much earlier. I was just really struck, especially reading it all at once, like just by what a real superhero masterpiece I think that book is.
It's a very, very, very tight book.
Super tight.
That being said, the all-new Hawkeye being done by Jeff Lemire right now, also very excellent.
Also very good.
So read Hawkeye, Matt Fraction Hawkeye, fall in love with Hawkeye.
Yeah.
and then dive into all new Hawkeye, taken up by Jeff Lemire, who is a no-joke writer in his own name. And, man, the Hawkeye stuff right now, so good.
It's really good.
You're missing out if you're not on Team Hawkeye.
That book and, like, Mark Waid's Daredevil and, like, Miss Marvel heralds in this really cool
She-Hulk,
this really cool new way of looking at superheroes.
Yeah.
Yep. Which I love.
Yeah, they all have the same human brains and hearts
yeah.
that we do, and they're just like in a super weird, extraordinary situation.
Yep. And it's a little bit closer, like it's a little bit more character. It's less fate of the entire universe and more, you know, closer to you know, kind of eye level.
Sure.
In a lot of ways. So
love it.
And there's a dog named Pizza Dog. So
and there's a dog named Pizza Dog. Who's like not even really named, like they may like the name of that dog is Arrow.
Really?
They just like refer, sometimes he just really likes pizza.
Oh.
I think at the very end of the book, they call him Pizza Dog.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good to know.
So anyway, that's Hawkeye from Matt Fraction. If you haven't checked it out, it's available in 4 different volumes. You can get the first 11 issues are collected into this beautiful hardcover, which I think is really, because it is a little oversized. So
nice.
I think that's a really good way to
read it.
You
don't want to go widescreen.
Absolutely. Let's move on to our last little segment of the day where our friends over at CoverJudger.com, which is a comic book review site. It's a really good one.
Yes.
You should check it out. CoverJudger.com. They hipped us to this article from Paste Magazine. So thank you, dudes at CoverJudger, for sending this over to us. So the name of this article is, and I'm just going to run through it really quick, and then I want to get your guys' thoughts. What our failure to cover Attack on Titan says about the comics industry? That's the title of the article. The gist of this is that Star Wars ships a million copies earlier this year.
And everyone loses their mind.
And everybody loses their mind. So there's it made mainstream media, basically, which comics don't really do very often. Like single-issue comic sales, like that's not really a thing that people care about usually. This was a really huge deal, and it was featured in a bunch of different places. What these guys at Paste Magazine, this is an article that we're going to link to by Shay Henham, really, really interesting article, that they point out a few things. That first of all, you know, 300,000 of those million copies were a Loot Crate included book.
Yeah, Loot.
So Loot Crate bought almost a third of those books.
Yeah.
Right off the bat. Also, they point out that the number of books sold to retailers, all it means is that comic shops own those books.
And that's really what the industry cares about.
What do you mean?
Well, publishers, not the industry. That's what publishers... So, Marvel isn't making their money off someone buying a comic shop or a comic book at our shop.
Right.
They make their money when we buy the comic book, we being the comic shop, from the distributor.
Hopefully we'll order more of the comic book. But
right.
those sales numbers, especially for single issue comic books, those are books sold out the door, shipped to retailers, and then
who knows?
Who knows
right.
what happens to them. And in the article they talk about, you know, how they counted 200 copies of Uncanny Avengers #1 that are still sitting on the shelves many months. Like we have some stuff like that around Vault Midnight.
Absolutely.
You know. But and so this writer calls this, you know, a shell game in a lot of ways. That, you know, a million comics sold, that's huge.
Right.
That's a ton of comics. There's no doubt about it. But a lot of stuff sells in that quantity. So Attack on Titan has sold 45 million copies of all of its volumes globally.
And at a higher price point than a comic book.
Yeah. So that's all of the volumes.
Yep.
And there's a bunch of them. But we're looking at 2.5 million copies in English, but it is, again, it's a longer series.
Yeah.
It's a ton of books.
We're up to, in the States, we're up to 14 or 15 volumes.
15, I think, yep.
Of Attack on Titan in English, and then significantly more than that in, with our friends across the pond in Japan there. But 45 million, that ain't no joke.
That's crazy.
It's a big book.
And that's also a comic book.
Right.
And that's really kind of what this gets into, is the idea of the otherness of comics, right, is and how the media views them and how we view them and how readers view them, of single-issue comics and then everything else, right?
Right.
So is in manga being treated differently and web comics being treated differently? You know, what are the numbers that they give? So, you know, Homestuck get 600,000 unique visitors per day. This is, you know, an online comic.
Right.
It's also free.
Right.
XKCD is getting like 60, 70 million hits a month.
That's insane.
According to this article.
A lot of hits.
No, it's free, but that doesn't mean that those comics aren't pulling in profit.
Yeah, and they're making money, but...
Yeah, but to the viewer, it's like, oh, my new XKCD, what up, doe?
Yeah.
Like,
so... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no, I don't think I'm done.
I just... one of the things that I need to establish is that there are a lot of people who classify comic books and manga as two different categories.
Yeah.
Comics are not manga. Manga are not comics.
Or classify... we hear this sometimes. Some of us might have even said it. I don't really read comics. I mostly read graphic novels.
Sure.
It's like it's a separation kind of in the other way.
I read manga. I don't read comics.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So manga, in my mind, manga and comics, same thing.
Totally.
Same method of storytelling. Different cultures, put out a lot of them, but same storytelling.
There'll be some dominant styles. There'll be some different sort of touchstones for each.
There's not some tonal distinctions or whatever. There's something that, you know... make something I really identifiably manga at least, or sometimes there usually is maybe.
But this idea of the other, and manga falls into that category, and all ages books fall into this category, the other type of comic. Recently, we had Rena Telgemeier in the shop.
Yeah.
Her books, Drama Sister and Smile, New York Times bestsellers.
Mm-hmm.
Huge books, big number of books. And we had a decent turnout for her event. It was good. There were a lot of people there.
No, so, yeah, a lot of people.
She sells more comics than, I mean...
Oh, my God.
Superman. She sells more comics than Superman. You know,
knocks the hell out of it. Yeah.
You know and those three books you mentioned have sold more than Star Wars number one.
Oh, way more.
Combined.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, absolutely.
Significantly more.
You know, but we bring Jason Aaron to the comic shop. I would be interested to see what the turnout for that was.
Right.
Because he's not in the other category.
Jason Aaron, the writer of...
Star Wars. He is a comic, quote-unquote, comic book writer.
Sure.
That writes traditional comic books. I bet if we were to bring Jason Aaron into the house, we'd have a line outside the door. But because he's in the traditional zone. And Rena, who writes all ages comics, and that's a term she doesn't even like, she writes comics that are geared for kids, is in the other zone. And the same with Ms. Marvel. Ms. Marvel is a huge seller. Sells more than just about any Marvel comic book. But because it's not for a certain audience, Ms. Marvel often gets put in the other category, and it's total horseshit.
Yeah. So this article is kind of all over the place. It's kind of scattershot, I think, in a lot of ways. But it does bring up this interesting idea of, you know, what do we need to do to, you know, what are publishers doing to bring everybody into comic books, right? And because we were talking about this earlier on the way over, that, you know, manga and web comics have a broader audience.
Totally.
And, you know... manga is regarded in Japan as it's a medium for everybody.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know?
But there is a comic in the realm of manga for everybody.
For every demographic, for everybody that's aiming.
Which, yeah, recently your traditional mainstream books are starting to figure out a little bit more.
Yeah, your American single-issue comic books, they're starting to figure out that there's a larger audience out there. Because that's the cliche about Japanese mangas. Like, you look on the subway in Japan, and everybody's reading manga.
Right.
Regardless of, you know, age and gender and what have you, everybody's reading manga, right? So their books are a little bit broader. They're about other stuff. They're about women. They're about people of different races. They're about people of different socioeconomic, what have you. The scope is broader.
Right.
And it's maybe a little bit narrower in American mainstream comics. And we might be at a point right now where we're finally starting to see some changes to that. We're starting to just get the very tip of starting to see some changes of it. We're not there yet.
No.
But
I would say in the last, you know, 2 years, we've seen a pretty big influx of really kick-ass lady superheroes who aren't necessarily for the male eye. Mm-hmm. Thinking my Miss Marvels, my Captain Marvels, my She-Hulks,
yep.
My Barbara Gordon Batgirls. But it's still, I mean, like you said, it's just the thing. What I'm interested to see is we're seeing a big influx of all-ages comics, which is great, but our readership for the older folk, it's hard. These people grew up, were reading comics in the 90s.
Right.
Those of us who work in the industry now aren't necessarily the biggest fan of this decade of comic book writing.
Right.
But how, you know, we we want these people to read comics. We want these people to have comics that they enjoy so that everyone gets to read comics.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a real interesting time. We're getting some comics for women, and that's great. It's not enough. It's just starting.
Yep, and other voices. Yep. And, you know, LGBTQ stuff is, like, starting to... They're finally starting to see some perspectives other than stuff just for white, right, straight dudes.
Yep.
Yeah, Caucasian male taxpayers.
Exactly. Like, this all comes back to this idea of the other, which is what intrigued me the most about this article that Coverage Editor shared with us. So I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a great article. We're going to post it in our show notes. Give it a read. It is a little bit of a scatter read. There's a lot they're trying to pack in here. But for me, what I found really interesting was the difference in the diversity of who's reading what, and this idea of shell numbers. I find it fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I know I work in a comic shop. We got a lot of Guardians team up at the old Vault of Midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel counts that as comics sold, and that is
yeah,
fake. That is a fake number.
Right.
It is not real. And that's super fascinating to me.
The last thing I'll say is my concern, too, and the thing I notice is if the end customer is whoever is doing the ordering for that shop, if that's who you're concerned with appeasing, that's one person with one perspective. And if they're not considering other voices and other perspectives, then you begin to sort of, block some people out of the comics.
And you're talking
and
about...
Everybody's in the cool club. There's a comic for everybody.
Now, you're talking about comic shop owners.
Yes,
the people that are ordering comics, correct, if not the owners. You're talking that if publishers are just aiming for those dudes that are reading previews,
previews is the ordering catalog we order comic books from.
Yep. And, hey, we've been to plenty of conventions. We know who those, you know, those dudes look similar.
Yep, sometimes.
Yeah. You know, they look a lot like us. But it's a bunch of white dudes for the most part.
Sure.
You know, I'm making huge generalizations, yep, right now. But it is, when you're aiming at a particular audience, you're absolutely right. That's obviously going to be it's going to narrow it down.
Right. And if your solicitation information, your ads are aimed at this one person with, you know, who maybe not be considering all the other voices, and that's because
that is the customer.
It's that one person. After they order X amount, 100 copies of the next Avengers spinoff, not poo-pooing the Avengers. I love those dudes. Cap's my favorite. What up, though? Then you're not considering all those people that are going to come into the store and either purchase or not purchase those books.
Because it's not your problem. As a publisher, who
cares?
Have
a full, robust comic experience. You've got your cash in hand,
yep,
a month before that book ships.
Absolutely.
It's also, and I'll just wrap on this, I talk to people about comics a lot. I make recommendations to people off the clock. And I got some family members who live over in Colorado, told them to go pick up a copy of Ms. Marvel, went to their comic shop, no Ms. Marvel, Volume 1. God doesn't stock it. It blows my mind.
Yeah.
How can you not stock Kamala Khan? It's like, A, it's a really important book. B, it will make you a ton of money. It sells itself. It's a wildfire book. It's hog wild for Ms. Marvel. And this dude just doesn't even...
It's like, we don't even have time to talk about like how fucked that is.
That's so fucked, right?
Yeah.
But it's real, and there are comic shops out there, and that's it. Is that there? It's a small group of people who are ordering the comics for everyone, and that's a...
Oh my God! If you think about it like that,
yeah,
like think about how minuscule the comic book audience is in general,
yep,
compared to the audience for any other medium.
Sure.
But the actual audience
purchaser
are the purchasers, and that's comic shops, and there's like a few thousand in the country,
right?
You guys, like the number of comic shops in the United States is... It will shock you by how low that number is. And that's actually the audience.
Right. So think about it. In the greater Ann Arbor area where we do this podcast,
yeah,
there's three comic shops.
And that's like in Ann Arbor proper,
yeah,
there's one comic
right
shop. And then if you get outside of town, there's another
right
couple.
So if the greater Ann Arbor area, there are three or four people who control the entire flow,
yeah,
of comics to this area.
And so if they give a shit, and if
right
they're trying to pay attention, but you're totally at the whims of how good is the person buying those comics.
Of four people. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
It's not my favorite. So don't be afraid to roll up in your comic shop and tell them what you want.
Oh,
maybe give them a
do
heads up. Offer them some notes for improvement. Let
absolutely
them know about some new stuff. These guys are...
holy shit.
Everybody gets a little bit of tunnel vision. They like what they like. They figure out, you know, people think they know what works.
Yep.
But don't be afraid to give your shop some feedback. Give us some feedback, you know?
Let them know.
Let us know what's up.
Yep, let us know.
We all need all the help we can get.
Absolutely. And if your comic shop won't do it for you, then shoot me an email because I will hook you up. That's with some comics.
Sorry, that blows my goddamn mind. I'm like, yeah, I'm stuck on it a little bit. It didn't really come to me until we were talking it out.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bummer.
Well, we're going to leave it there with your mind blown. And it was a pleasure to talk with you guys.
Yeah, you guys too. That was some great combo.
Christian, thank you for hanging out with us, man.
Yeah, oh,
man.
Thanks for having me.
That worked out really well. I'm sorry that it got so personal and weird and invasive.
Oh, no, that's how I do. It's like, oh, here's some personal information. Here's some deprecating humor about myself because I feel a little vulnerable. But now you all know me better. Also, I'm afraid to go into my own basement to do laundry because it's really scary. It's like a horror film set.
Now
down
you're
there.
Just like volunteering ammunition, I feel
no,
like.
No, I'm soliciting friendship because I need a chaperone to go do my laundry.
I will walk little, you into your basement
little,
anytime
little,
you want.
A little ripe in the studio right now because it's time to do laundry and I ran out of buddies to...
I wasn't going
to
say anything.
To move you down there, so just, you know.
Well... Okay, for real, on that note, thus ends another issue of Super Skull, the Vault of Midnight podcast. You can hear us every Wednesday, wherever podcasts are found. That's New Comic Day, Wednesday. Recognize. Our music was created by A-Bomb. Our logo was designed by Philip Wong. Our producer is Rachel Polk, who just loves telling us how much time we're spending on this podcast. Man, sorry, dude.
She's the grease that makes this clock work.
She's the timekeeper.
She's the timekeeper.
She's like our time lord.
She's like the time lord.
She's the time lord.
That's right. Make sure that you follow us on Twitter and Insta-Twitter and Twitgram and what else?
Twitterverse.
Grambook.
On Grambook.
All right.
At Super Skull Show. If you just scream at Super Skull Show into your computer, into your desktop computer.
We'll show up at your house and make you coffee.
Exactly. You can check out our website, www.superskullshow.com. Go ahead and send us some questions. We're going to answer them. Leave us a review on iTunes, if you don't mind. If you have a second, you've got a second. Come on.
You just had like 60 times 60.
Yeah. After that, you've got a second. I don't know. I don't want to like get hostile, but you've got a second. If you're listening to the end of this podcast, you either fell asleep.
Yep.
Or you're not paying attention, in which case it doesn't matter if I'm hostile. Or you probably kind of give a shit about this podcast.
Yeah, you're super fan.
And also, if you're still listening, I'm sorry.
And if you're still listening, I didn't mean to get so hostile. But do leave us a review. Come on, what are you doing? Check out our website. I already talked about that. Super Skull is brought to you by Vault of Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff since 1996. This is Nick Weibar for Christian Silberice and Marcus Schwimmer. Wishing you good reading. Until next week. I was on a drink trolley.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Have you guys ever been on a drink trolley?
Not See, that I remember.
You sit on the... I rented it out for myself.
Okay. You're fucking kidding
There's
me.
No one else on it.
Are you serious?
No, I'm not serious.
Oh, I was going to say, what kind of comic book money do you fucking have? Just like, oh, I'll just rent this whole fucking trolley for myself.
Exactly. Okay. Can you think of anything sadder than a drink trolley alone?
It sounds super peaceful. I brought like a Hemingway book with me.
Sounds like a nightmare.
No, I wouldn't mind it.
Every time, everybody we drove by, I just felt like I had to apologize to them.
Why?
Because you look, there's no way to be on a drink trolley and not look like a total asshole.
Could have borrowed my yellow pants.
I could have, but if I had been wearing your yellow pants, I would have looked, they would have let me drive the drink trolley.